listeners to Sounding Out's podcast series, an oral chronicle of sound and culture. Sounding Out remixes the everyday with theory, insight, and practice. To learn more, please visit us on the web at www.soundstudiesblog.com. Until then, stay tuned for today's episode.
Vessel is a liquid physics puzzle platformer game set in an alternate sort of world history, similar to our own, where liquid automatons called fluoros that used to serve humans have gone amok and out of control, and now the player must solve the puzzles to put the world back into balance. So Vessel was released in March 2012, so about 2 years ago on the PC, and then just recently re-released on PlayStation 3. And it's a highly rated game. It was 81 on Metacritic and ranked at the 51st PC game of the entire year of 2012. So really great game. Loved working on it. It just has a great feel to it. So the constraints with Vessel were that I really wanted to record all of the sounds myself, not use any library sounds at all, and I wanted to use minimal effects processing on the source of the sound to keep it as natural as possible and really create like a really realistic world for Vessel using FMod Designer. I wanted to create a compelling world and really focus on immersion to keep the player inside the game and inside this sort of, you know, simulated universe, because the liquid physics were just amazing, and so I wanted to really support that with the sound design. So we also use Lua, which is also open source, and it was easy to integrate into the custom level editor built by Strange Loop Games. And the level editor was called Splinter, and it was and Lua was used for all elements of the game. And the cool thing is that it doesn't require recompilation, so we could run the game, and I could change the Lua script and not have to recompile things. So basically on the fly. So with the sound design for Vessel, I really wanted the sounds to be dynamic. And really, a lot of the dynamic nature of the sound is simply because of the recordings that I did. So I really had, I was very mindful about capturing sounds that I thought had some sort of emotional sort of, thing with them. They had some sort of meaning or some sort of voice behind them. As far as the technical aspects, did a lot of granulation and requires a lot of voices on the CPU. And I use many different techniques that I talk about in my presentation at the Game Developer Conference in 2012, talking about Vessel. And here's just a few of them. So I did sequential sound design. And so that's where I transition between elements sort of through time and sort of crossfade from one element to the next. And so with video games, you might have a sound, say like an impact that has a sort of, you know, resonant sort of quality afterwards. And so what you do is you do a random container for that initial impact, that attack, and then for the sustained or, you know, release portion of it, there is a separate container that has a whole bunch of, you know, say 10 different sounds that are, you know, being triggered. So you never know if it's going to go sound 1 to sound 2, sound 1 to sound, you know, 7 or whatever. So the tricky thing is to try and figure out how to, you know, fuse one part of the sequence to the next. And then with layering, I stacked multiple sounds at the same time. But the problem here is that the same with sound design as general is just to avoid sonic mush, because the more layers you add, the more possible conflict you have with your frequencies. So you have to watch out for that. Spectral layering is really the same as layering, but with that is to try and figure out how to split the sounds out in sort of a timbral kind of, like, these are the high sounds, so it's like the ch-ch, you know, kind of like mechanism part or something like that, and then you've got the low part, which is like the low sweetener kind of thing, like the really low end, and then the mid-range is like the like the, you know, sort of the meat, the punch of the sound. So, and some advanced sort of ways that I was working with the sound design is that I had some sounds that changed in size, speed, and depth, the depth being sort of the distance from the camera, the way that you're viewing it, right? So if it's sort of into the screen more because it's a platformer, then it would be further away, right? But then it's if it's really close to you, then do you make it loud or do you make it quiet because it's actually further away from the player character who is occupying sort of the middle plane? You know, there's certain things that we ran into that were kind of tricky to figure out. So water was very complex and it was entirely tied to the physics engine, and so the audio coder, Kieran Lord, also known as Crate Smith, and I worked together to get a consistent, believable system. So what we needed to do is consider the amount of liquid colliding, the hardness of the surface it's colliding with, the type of liquid, so goo, water, or something like that, and then if it's hitting the player's head and how fast it's traveling. So if it's hitting the sort of avatar's head, then we wanted the sound of the water to change, so it really felt like the water was hitting you. So how, like, sort of what I hinted at before, like, because you've got this player character, like, avatar on screen, but it's separate from the camera because you're not looking at it first person, you're looking at it, like, third person. So the way that we resolved this is that we had our panning set by the camera, the way that you're looking at it, sort of where your head is, like as the player looking into this imaginary sort of diorama, kind of where there's this guy running around. But then for sounds that were closer to the avatar, we would magnify those. So it's like having a big magnifying glass following him around so that sounds that he was closer to would make, you know, they'd be louder, and sounds that were further away from the player would be quieter. So that was the way that we sort of resolved that issue. It's always interesting with games to sort of try and figure out where the point of view is. With film, you can be a lot more creative, but with games, you really gotta be able to tell the computer, you know, the system, exactly the way that you want it to sound. So that was an interesting challenge that we came across, and we actually had to spend a lot of time figuring it out. It sounds really simple now, but as you're working on it, it's a tricky thing to go like, yeah, that just doesn't sound right. Like, you look at it, and it just doesn't sound right. So I was able to do very precise parameter control and synchronize, you know, sounds such as steam puffs for all the little cracks and all the little, like, pipes in the game. And so, yeah, the tricky thing here as well is trying to figure out the balance between, do you want it to be realistic, or do you want it to really sort of have some emotion behind it? So if you're adding too many sounds, it's hard for the player to focus, and so you don't want to have all that stuff. But it's still nice to have, like, complexity and depth for, you know, the simulation. And every element has got layers of sound. So say for the lava fluoro, it's like this burning blob of sort of, you know, self-aware kind of lava moving around, and his little footsteps are made of wet rags slapping the ground, and then water sizzling on a hot pan, just sort of, right? So, yeah, it was an interesting process of trying to figure out how to combine these different layers, but for almost all the sounds, there was more than one layer. Yeah, similar to Retro City Rampage, I found that adding, like, a layer of noise, like filtered noise, gave a nice grit that gave a little bit of extra texture. One of the sounds that I really struggled with was to try and get the character of the fluoros, the sort of automatons, to sound correct, because I really wanted the player to have empathy for the little guys, because, yeah, I'll often, like, to solve a problem, there's no way to avoid destroying them. And you just feel, like, looking at the visuals, you just kind of feel bad. Like, they're these little kind of cute blobs that have these little googly eyes and, like, little feet. And then you're crushing them underneath, like, you know, or sucking them through things and spitting them out. And, Yeah, it's. I wanted the player to identify with the creatures and that literally give them their own voice. So the way that I did that is that I came across a vintage Dick Tracy gun from the 50s, I guess, that was sort of like, but if you did it really fast, it gave this sort of siren sound. So I recorded it in the back of an antique shop, and since the siren sound rose and fell depending on how fast you spun it, then it made a great sound for the vocalizations just by granulating it. So chopping it up and then randomly playing those bits of the siren's call, it had a really real world sort of mechanical feel to it. But then the siren, like the it had a really vocal quality to it. And this is the sound of the fluoros when they're searching around, and when they get closer to their desired goal, then I would just pitch like, and just sort of cut it up, right? So we had sort of low, like, then middle. And higher. Where it's faster and like the pitch is higher. So yeah, it sounds like they're getting more excited towards their goal, and it really gives the player a clear idea of like what the fluoros are doing without having to look at them, and also allows you to sort of solve the puzzles faster because you're like, oh, that guy is just about to do what he wants to do. Okay, why does he want to do that? And it's just raw edited chunks of that recording. I couldn't use that same approach for the fluoro deaths, like when you crush them. I wanted sort of a fluid-based scream. So I tried screaming underwater, screaming into a glass of water, and several other attempts, but it just never worked out. So eventually what I did was I was recording a rubber ear syringe and found that if I squeezed the water out really fast, it gave a real sort of yell at the end of it while spitting out the water. So not only did this really cut through the mix, but it really gave a nice watery squeal with the sense of being crushed, like you're squeezing this, you know, rubber ear syringe, and also squeezing like literally the breath out of it. So I thought that was pretty fun. Say for the lava boss, what I did is I wanted it to be really horrifying. So I tried to use combinations of glurpy sounds, or, you know, like oatmeal bubbling away and pitching it down, but it just never worked. And also trying to get human vocalizations in there just on their own didn't work either. But when I was recording a nail being scraped across a really big metal plate, it just, the sound is excruciating. It's just like nails on a chalkboard. So for the boss roar, the lava boss roar, I just pitched down the recording a bit and put it into the game with a bit of distortion and compression, and also mixed in a granulated recording of myself burbling into a cup of water. That was also pitched down to give the sense that the creature was really big. So it's got this, you know, but it's like this, it's hard to, you know, fake. It's just got this really nice quality to it of just scraping. It's a fairly easy technique, but for the fluoros that are about to explore or are stuck, we have events that add a bit of strain to their impending doom by a vocalization that's basically ramped up in pitch. So it just gives that sense of like urgency when a pitch of the sound goes up. And so the higher the pitch goes, the more it pulls itself out of any masking, you know, but same thing as sort of that squeezing sort of thing, you know, because there's a lot of gears and other things that are sort of clanking away in the background. So when the fluorals melt away, I do the opposite by having a steam layer as they sink into the floor. Thank you. Yeah, I believe that simplicity is a key, and it can take a long time to arrive at a very, well, so-called obvious answer. But it's difficult to find one that matches all of your criteria, but doesn't sort of, in a sense, match other ones. Like, it's trying to figure out how to edit down and distill things down to the essence. So I really believe that great Foley is similar to playing a musical instrument and even sometimes making it a musical instrument. So this is one reason why cartoon sound effects are so iconic. You know, you can capture an emotion with just a really simple setup. And so that's a really cool challenge. So I tried to bring a little bit of that into Vessel. I spent a lot of time recording gears, but I found that really getting the proper clunk and the stress of it is actually that my best results were with large farm equipment that would ratchet, and it sort of go like, and then get the nice resonance of the rest of the metal of the what's surrounding it. Whereas, like, actual big gears, if they're working well, like I actually recorded like a 100-year-old clock, and it turns out that the actual physical mechanism of the clock is kind of disappointingly tiny. And so when recording it, even the one that I was able to record out in the country, you know, like you have those big clock towers where you can, you know, at the whatever city hall. And it turns out that those clocks, like the actual clock mechanism itself, is usually only about like a meter by a meter and a half kind of in size and footprint. So, yeah, I never knew. And with recording the sounds, like all of the sounds, and thinking like, oh, I need all these big clankings from, oh, man, the gears in there must be huge. Well, no, they're not. So that was kind of funny. And then, yeah, like I found that same thing as adding in just like a synthetic noise. I would just add in grit, like squeaks and stuff like that. And same thing is like when you really want to get something to sound big, you want to have the person anticipate it, like a whoosh, you know, like a whoop, here it comes, and then bam, like the swoosh and then the impact. So like a... is better than just... just doesn't have the same appeal to it. Building a sense of anticipation, it carves out a big, you know, a larger space for the conclusion. So, yeah, it's important to give cues to the listener and really guide them, sort of like compose your sounds, the same as one would with music. Like, you have this thing, you're going to this thing, and you end up at this thing. So you have a start, a middle, and an end. It's good to think of sort of that arc when working in sound design, at least for me. Okay, yeah, so if you're interested in more resources for Vessel, I have GDC Talk, and it's available on the GDC Vault, but unfortunately it requires a paid membership. But you can also listen to my talk on my website at videogameaudio.com, and just search for Vessel. Another thing that's good to search up if you're interested in the details of Vessel, and this one's a video, is that I gave a breakdown of how I worked with the music for the adaptive music with the stems by John Hopkins, the composer. Just like search YouTube, you should be able to find it. And so it also shows my use of Lua in there as well, which is kind of fun. Thanks again. We'll see you. So make sure to stick around for my concluding remarks about Retro City Rampage, Vessel, SimCell, on the Sounding Out podcast. Thanks. Okay, so what I've found just by putting these three different games together is that I realize I like putting constraints on myself and find that that really pushes my creativity when working with game audio. And I try to stick to the core of what I find what works, and then I just remove all the elements that I don't think are contributing to the actual sort of emotional result, and just reducing and distilling and pruning off those non-essential elements so that allows the listener just to focus. Yeah, really sort of exploring those limits, like me, like learning how to do chiptunes or recording all of the sounds. You know, like for me, I learned a lot, and it put me in a creative space that I had never been in before. I really like sculpting sounds and often try to discover a process that will sort of allow me to grow something or build up something so that I have sort of my raw material, and then I just carve it down from there. And then, with games, there's often so many sounds that it's really important to give clarity, because once you layer a few of those, then it's easy to get lost in sort of sonic goop. Hopefully from this talk, you're inspired to try out game audio on your own. And all of these techniques are things that you can try out. Like, getting a Zoom H4n is like around, if you wanted, I would suggest getting the H6 at this point for maybe $500 or so. It's totally affordable. You get a laptop or even a desktop, and download Pure Data, download OpenMPT, download FMod Studio or Wise. Try them out. You can do it. Really learning how to do all this stuff just takes time, right? So I find that I try to add as few effects as possible when I'm working, because, it can drown out the flavor of a sound, similar to adding too many spices. So multi-band compression, you can see it like it's like adding too much hot sauce. And it's great when used in moderation, but if you use too much, then it can just really destroy the taste. And I try to use a subtractive EQ. And so what I'll do is that if I find a sound that I just, there's something, I don't like that particular tone, I'll actually take a parametric EQ and sweep the frequencies, or the frequency that I'm looking for. It actually like amp it maybe up 6 dB and just sweep with a plus 6 dB in a really narrow EQ. And then find the tone that I don't like, and then just flip the EQ around and then subtract that out. So all of the tools that I use in my own professional sound design are easily accessible to anybody, and I don't think that anybody should be held back by their gear. I used to definitely feel this when I was younger, and I was just like, if I just had this thing, then it would allow me to do everything, it'd be so perfect. Well, a lot of it is just finding out kind of like the proper signal chain, and just minimizing things down until you feel comfortable, and making that your instrument. Your studio is your instrument. So, if you don't like the sound with Pure Data, then, worse comes to worse. Reprogram it yourself. You can actually recompile it. And so that brings up a huge thing, like within game audio, like if you don't like it, you have access to the source in general. And you can just, if you really want to, you can learn C++ programming and change it, right? It's the same thing, like usually what one wants to do is you want to have sort of layers, like you want to have your sort of game audio middleware. So that would be like FMod Studio or Wise. And then underneath that, you've got like Lua. And then underneath that, you've got sort of C++. And hopefully that would allow for any sort of, interactive or behavioral sound design that you want to do within a game. So, I really enjoy teaching, and hopefully you've gotten some interesting information out of this recording. And so, I really enjoy working with students both live, like in a university setting, and then also with my online school. Because it's amazing to see students that didn't believe that they could get something, that they could see sort of the result. But when they see the result, they're just like, oh my God, like, it's just like, really, it's just like then that light goes off. So, hopefully, in a small way, this recording helps you out as well. And hopefully it inspires you in your own work with video game audio. And feel free to send me an email if you have any questions. Just look for videogameaudio.com, and my email is at the bottom. So, happy game audio. And, ask me questions. Totally into it. And thanks for sounding out, for giving me this opportunity to put together a podcast and just, basically spew a few words out about how I do things when I'm working with game audio. And yes, it's super fun. I've been doing it for a long time. And if I didn't think it was fun, then I wouldn't be doing it. So if you want to have some fun, download Pure Data, you know, try out some stuff in OpenMPT by downloading some music, download the theme song to Retro City Rampage in .it format, take it apart, and just play around. I mean, that's what games are. It's playing. So thanks again, and we'll see you. That's the end. All three episodes for the Sounding Out podcast about video game audio. Thanks again.